We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol up and trying to tear democracy down. We need a picture of folk trying to build a democracy up and lift up all people, regardless of who they are. June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do?
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on!
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday morning here on WPFW. And would you believe we've been coming to you for 16 years, Mertine and I, and with our outstanding co-host, Nikechi Taifa, we try to bring you the latest information regarding the criminal justice field, in particular how it impacts those inside and those who just come home. We've been doing this for a long time, and it's a special show this morning that we're talking about. We're going down memory lane. We normally do this show every 3-4 months with three people. Two of our co-hosts have passed on, Reverend Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale and Stephen Foots Bolton. And on top of that, we have another guy who's been on our show, a big supporter and helped us pick our guests and lay out the show, Coach Butch McAdams. And we'll talk about those three folk who are no longer with us and also what's going on in Washington, D.C., in terms of memory, because Chocolate City ain't chocolate no more. So, but before we start, we open up at what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Oh, I heard through the grapevine. Don't you know that I heard through the grapevine? Oh, I just know about the
lose my mind. Honey, honey,
hey, 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 Massachusetts makes calls free from prisons and jails. The Massachusetts governor last year signed a bill making her state the fifth state in the nation to eliminate fees for prison and jail phone calls. When the law took effect on December of last year, the state joined Connecticut, California, Minnesota, and Colorado in providing no-cost communications for those incarcerated. That's 5 states out of 50, and this is a multi-billion-dollar-year industry. So all phone calls from men and women and kids inside of institutions, prisons, jails, and detention facilities should be free. Good. Congratulations to the governor of New York, and a hat goes off to her. Thank you for that. Over half of U.S. women on probation or parole needs permission to travel for abortion. Policies are a 1-2 punch for women caught in criminal justice system. The number of women on probation or parole who must seek permission to travel for an abortion more than doubled to 635,000 in 2 years since the Supreme Court overturned the federal right to abortion. 14 states have near total abortion bans and 21 restrictive procedures. Together with ubiquitous travel restrictions imposed by probation and parole, more than half of the women on probation or parole in the U.S. must seek permission to travel before obtaining an abortion, or they'd be in violation and might be subjected to being returned back to prison. The policies are a 1-2 punch for women caught in the criminal justice system. The research came just ahead of today, the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which the Supreme Court used to overturn Roe versus Wade in 2022. An additional 400,000 women is a lot of additional women to be put in this very precarious situation. Travel has become one of the key ways Americans have continued to legally terminate pregnancies, even amid abortion bans. An estimated 171,000 Americans traveled for an abortion in 2023. many from southern states with sprawling criminal justice system. Now, hundreds of thousands more women face the additional burden of getting permission to travel for an abortion from a correctional officer. An estimated 82% of women on probation and 85% of women on parole live in states that ban or restrict abortion and also restricts travel for people under supervision. Across the country, the proportion of women traveling to other states for abortion care has nearly doubled in recent years. Women under supervision are likely to be poor, the majority with incomes below $20,000 a year, and the primary caregivers of children or other family members. Many struggle with addiction and are in fact on probation or parole for drug charges. Women on probation and parole are also more likely to report chronic health conditions and disabilities than the general public. Overall, it is a group of women juggling a lot of responsibilities with not a lot of resources. Maryland prison guards filed discrimination lawsuits alleging racism by a gang of white officers. A group of Maryland correctional officers had filed a sweeping discrimination lawsuit alleging that a gang of white guards known as 40 West created a culture of racism against blacks and immigrant employees at the Maryland Correctional Training Center. The lawsuit claims that the COs who are black or people of color have been subjected to frequent racial slurs and lose out on promotions and overtime shifts because of coordinated efforts by white officers. The complaint brings civil claims under the Racketeering Influence and Corrupt Organization Act, also known as RICO, as well as discrimination claim. It proposes several classes of officers who are all allegedly harmed by the coordinated efforts of white officers. Upon information and belief, a group of Caucasian COs, correction officers, organized to engage in illegal behavior and to take administrative control of the Maryland Correctional Center up in Hagerstown by creating a race-based gang called 40 West. 40 West Boys, or 40 West Gang, decades prior to the present. The complaint claims that members of the gang worked in concert to help each other earn promotions, receive training that benefit their careers, and pick up overtime shifts ahead of black or immigrant officers. People of color were also targeted for discipline over small infractions, while white officers' misconduct sometimes went ignored by the Maryland Department of Public Safety. The plaintiffs also say that they have been subjected to frequent and racial harassment, including the use of the N-word and other racial slurs, being told, "Go back to your country. We don't want blacks here," and hearing other officers mimic monkey noises over the prison intercom system. The plaintiffs filed their lawsuit in Baltimore in July, and court records show it was removed to federal court in Baltimore the following week. Thomas Eller, another lawyer for the plaintiff, said the 40 West Gang seems to be named for the U.S. Route 40, which runs across the top of Maryland and through Hagerstown. This is clearly a situation where many, many people have been affected by the discrimination and unlawful choices of a select group of people in power. If the guards are treating other guards like this, how do you think the inmates are being treated? Out of prison, TikTok influencers are reshaping how we think about life behind bars. Woo! Out of prison, TikTok influencers are reshaping how we think about life behind bars. There's a 54-second video that went viral last year with more than 2.7 million views. Michael Lacey, who did 21 years in Indiana prisons and now posts under the username Conrad Sinque, went on to become one of the top creators in the niche realm of prison TikTok, where people who did time tell the rest of the world what it's like to put faces to the concept of mass incarceration. It is kind of ironic, but prison TikTok is one of the most positive places on the app. There is, of course, another variety of prison TikTok. Videos by currently incarcerated people with contraband phones who show the world the dismal conditions they live in and under and the variety of terrible food they're being served. Those kinds of videos began going viral near the beginning of the pandemic. But now it's former prisoners' posts that seems to be getting more attention. Some of the videos are heartwarming. some are informative, and some post about the use of sign language behind bars and how women handle their periods in prison. TikTok has been moved inside of the institution, and that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Good morning, our guest, Mr. Kenny Brown, and to our distinguished co-host, Ms. Nikisha Typer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Roach. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning, Nikisha. Good morning, Martine. Good morning, Roach.
And good morning. And this is, as you know, every few months we do a show called Going Down Memory Lane, where we talk about the history of D.C., how D.C. have changed, what impact our neighborhoods are having or going through. And on top of that, we lost two of our co-hosts who used to do the show with us, Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale and Stephen Foots Bolton. For the past several years, the two of them have been our regular co-hosts every few months on Going Down Memory Lane. And we thought we'd say goodbye to them in a different kind of way and share our thoughts. But also, we lost another good friend yesterday who hasn't been on Grapevine, but Coach Butch Mac Adams called us at least every once or twice a week with an idea or subject or topic matter. And he invited us on his show a few times, and he passed away the other day. And it's at our age, Kenny, our circle of friends are getting smaller and smaller. So for to Reverend Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale and Stephen Foots Bolton, who've been our co-hosts for the past several years here on Crossroads, we miss you. We love you. We want to say thank you. And folk, you can call in with your questions or comments on 202-588-0893. We'll be discussing going down memory lane and what's happening in Washington, D.C. and how things have changed. But first of all, we'll start off with you, Kenny Brown, who's a third generation Washingtonian. And I think I just met you 2 weeks ago, didn't I, Kenny?
Yes, sir.
We grew up together. Go ahead, Kenny.
I'd like to start off by saying what a fantastic job Crossroads is doing to educate people. Nikisha Roach Martine, when we go down the street now in Washington, talk about memory lane, I have to scratch my head and wonder where I am. I don't recognize the streets. I don't see any people I know anymore. So it's important for us to find a way to educate all of these people who have come to our city, and all of a sudden they think it's their city. They can tell us about Washington, D.C., and they've been here 5 minutes, if that. 5 minutes. I go into Ben's Chili Bowl, and a very attractive couple comes up to me and said, what is a half smoke? Sir, do you put chili on your French fries? I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
But they live in the neighborhood. Yeah. If I go to my church at 15th and V, St. Augustine, at the Mass on Saturday evening, I go into the church and the church is half full, but the parking lot's half empty. That tells me that these people are walking to 15th and V. They live in the neighborhood. They're pushing baby carriages. And it means that our memories are being left behind, because we need to tell our story and not let other people keep continuing to tell us our story. So I appreciate you, Roach. That show you did with Miss Ali was very informative. She talked from the perspective of being on U Street, coming from Virginia, learning from the ground up. And all of us on this call today are native Washingtonians, so we do know what we're talking about. I would see us, Roach, sitting down, getting some funding, and putting together, for want of a better term, a directory of minority business establishments in this town. When Father's Day came about, my daughter wanted to take me out for dinner. And I said, well, find me a minority restaurant to take me to.
Yes.
I said, Roach Brown said, you can't find one anywhere. And you know what my daughter said? Well, Daddy, if you could find it, this city council we have has made it impossible to park in this city. These are things we don't talk about from our elected leaders and what they're doing to force us out of this community. I'll stop and let Ms. Martine or Nikisha speak for a moment.
You got something you want to share, Nikisha?
Well, I just want to also give my condolences to the going down memory lane previous co-host, Sandra Buckner, Truesdale, and the like, because, you know, I always relish the times when we all would get together and reminisce. We were even doing it at Ben's Chili Bowl and the like. And, you know, their presence will surely be missed. And though I'm not quite as old as you and Kenny are, Kenny, you know, I went to my senior prom with your brother way back in the day, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I've been around in D.C. For a while, and I was on a Zoom yesterday by a noted author. I'm not going to mention his name, very noted and all. Wasn't from D.C., but wrote about D.C., and he was mentioning an incident that happened at, he said, U and 14th, and it just sounded so strange. U and 14th, U and 14th. We always say 14th and U. That's yeah. How. You know that somebody that's not a native Washingtonian, I mean, I said, you and 14th. I mean, I never really heard it like that. It's 14th and U Street Northwest, you know what I'm saying? So there are a lot of differences between native Washingtonians and newcomers who weren't here when D.C. was Chocolate City, shall we say. Now I call it Vanilla Bean.
You know, chocolate chip.
Chocolate chip. Well, I said vanilla bean because chocolate chip, there's a lot of chocolate up in there, but vanilla bean, the vanilla has kind of like taken over and the bean parts are just little sprinkles around. I don't know.
I want to clarify something, Roach and Martine. She went to her senior prom with my little brother, okay? Yeah. My younger brother, just to put in perspective from a time standpoint. But what she didn't say, her father, who was an educator in this city, her mother, who also was an educator in this city, did a lot to mentor and teach young Black people for years. Her father was a good friend of mine. He was a tough man. Oh,
now, I didn't know that, Kenny. I didn't even know you knew my daddy.
Oh, your daddy was something else, boy. You didn't know whether to hug him or run from him. He would tell me, he put his arm around me, he'd say, Brother Brown, you know, you got to kind of scare him sometimes. But we can go back down memory lane with people like him and your mother, who taught my sister, and say what they did for us in this city. And it's good memories. I will confess and say I'm going to try to hold it together today. When I think about Butch McAdams, you know.
Yes.
Wow. It's really tough. And Foots and I would leave the radio station, folks, and we made it a habit to walk up to Connecticut Avenue just to talk. A wealth of knowledge, and Foots was older than us in many ways, chronologically, but with wisdom. And I can't tell you what it meant to sit next to Dr.
Go ahead. We lost him. Okay. All right. He's talking about the relationship between him and Foots. Bowden, Steve Bowden, our co-host, along with Reverend Dr. Sandra Brother Truesdale. She died in October of last year, and Foots died several months ago. And we're still feeling the pain, and I can feel your hurt now, Kenny, in regards to our good buddy, Coach Butch McAdams. Coach Butch McAdams has been all over this city. He deals with everything besides sports. You could go on his radio show and deal with problems and situations, and he was always available. He always called us after a show if he didn't like it or he used to make some suggestions. But beyond that, he was a people person. Butch was all over this city. And I want to say that it's sad, but our circle of friends are getting smaller and smaller. And somebody had the nerve to call me an elder. I don't know what an elder is or what an elder is supposed to do. But these people like Coach Butch McAdams and Sandra Butler Truesdale and Stephen Foots Bowden, they left an indelible impression in Washington, D.C. They will be missed and will never be forgotten. And I know that I saw you a little few minutes ago, Kenny. I know you and Butch McAdams was extremely close and tight. You talked on. I call it. Coach would call me, then I call you. Then you call Coach, and Coach called me back, and we'd be in a round table discussion, and I don't know what the hell we were talking about, but I know I was talking to two friends, man.
We were sharing information, and it was so much. It was valuable information that I just don't want it to be lost.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important what WPFW is doing now with you and Martine and Nikichi. That I can tell you right now what Butch's plans were for the next 10 days.
Yeah.
We talked about it last Wednesday. We talked three times a week because, you know, he's doing a podcast. Plus, he was on a show on Sunday.
Yes.
And
on WOL Radio. How long have you been on it? About 15, 20 years, Kenny?
About 20 years.
20 years on WOL Radio, and he never missed a week, man.
Well, let me tell you what we did 3 weeks ago. He heard of the Penny Sisters, and you know who the Penny Sisters are,
Cecilia
and Evelyn Penny. And I said, well, I know Cecilia's daughter, Tina Scott. And we found Tina down in the Virgin Islands, and we did a show, and Tina took us down memory lane. You might have known Roach Martine. I didn't know that her mother owned several pieces of property in the 40s on 7th Street between S&T. She owned the building she had her restaurant in, and you could have lodgings upstairs. Also, that was the place to go, of course, for anybody who appeared at the Howard Theater. And she went on to talk about another sister we didn't know. It was a family of entrepreneurs. We're talking about in the 30s and 40s in this city that we never see written in any history books whatsoever. And Tina followed right along her mother's footsteps, successful entrepreneur who now lives in the islands half the year, lives here the other half, semi-retired. And these are things that we need to chronicle and teach to our younger people. To give them inspiration, to say, you can do it. You can do it. And there's so many stories like that out here.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was with Cecilia about 6 months to a year before she passed away. And we were working at Wilson's restaurant in Georgia NV, where we fed every Christmas Day. We fed over 1,000 to 2,000 people on Christmas Day for 12 years at Georgia NV, right across from Howard University Hospital. And Cecilia was there. She was a big backing contributor. And also her and a good friend of ours who is no longer with us, Ed Murphy. He built what's called the Harambe House in D.C., which is now Howard University's bookstore. He built a hotel and was the first black man we knew of since in 30 or 40 years to build a hotel. And he lost the hotel. And one of the main reasons, or one of the reasons was, is that he didn't have expertise or experience in hotel management. So he went to Howard. And Howard did not teach a course at that time doing hotel management and hotel operations. So they brought in a white guy to take over the management hotel, and it went down. But Ed Murphy was ahead of his time, and he and Cecilia started what's called the Black Business Roundtable. And that book that you mentioned before, we have it, Kenny. It's a book that came out in 75 or 76, published by the Howard University's Business School. And it listed over 600 black businesses in Washington, D.C., over 600 black businesses. And they list the name, address, and et cetera, and what they provided. Now we don't have, I don't know how many, 25, 50, say maybe less than 100 black businesses in Washington, D.C. And that Black Business Roundtable that Murphy and Cecilia Scott Penny started was, they showed us the importance of the dollar circulating in our community. The dollar do not circulate in our community anymore. You go to the corner store, it's owned by an Asian. When you pay them the money, they take that money and spend it in an Asian community. A lot of stores in the black community now are owned by Asians or people from other nationalities. And when they get the money that we pay them, that money goes to their community. Mm-hmm. So the money has been drying up. Now we talk about going down memory lane. This is also about money. We don't have the connections or the whatever to make sure that we can still maintain a social economic base in the city. We don't have an economic base as we used to have it back in the day. You may not like the beauty shops, the shoe shine parlors, the liquor stores, etc. but these were independent businessmen and women, and they made their living providing services to our community, and that's been eliminated. We're talking about going down memory lane. How do we remember the Harambe House, one of the first modern black hotels in 30, 40 years in Washington, D.C., and the folk, the Harambe House was off the chain. It was luxurious. It was a four and a half star hotel. It was done in an African motif, all the decorations and the furnishing. Just to walk into the building, you had a sense of belonging. You felt accomplished. Here's a black hotel built by a black man in the heart of Washington, D.C., on the campus of Howard University. And because of whatever reasons, he lost the hotel and they converted it to a bookstore. My partner, yeah, Larry Bryant, and I used to do the PR for Harambe House when they started. And I'm telling you, Red Fox, Richard Pryor, Stevie Wonder, all of the black entertainers, when they came into Washington, D.C., they wanted to stay at the Harambe.
So let me just tell you this, Roach. I'm sorry, because this brings up a little nostalgic tidbit of mine back there at the Harambe House. Stevie Wonder was coming out of there once, and I was going in, and we just communicated for a moment. He held my hand. He said, "I think I knew you in the spirit world," and that just made my day.
Yeah.
So that is my memory of the Harambe House, dealing with Stevie Wonder, thinking he knew me back in the spirit world. I don't know what that meant, but I liked it anyway.
Now that you said that, we just got back from New Orleans. We went down to New Orleans for Freedom for All Black and White Ball.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, Roach and Martine. Y'all won the big Fox and Rob's Sneaker Ball Award for the best community activist. What was it?
Well, it was the Griot Award, and it had seven couples from around the country. Couples, Nikisha, all the couples had been incarcerated. Most of them had been incarcerated, and they're working on the front line to make a difference and a change in our community. And you hear the stories of these seven couples, and it was all brought together by Fox and Rob, who did another movie called Time 2. And I'm going to tell you, the first movie is Time 1, about their life story and how they came out of prison. But this other movie that they showed, that we saw, we were privileged to be involved in this private screening down at the Jazz Market in New Orleans. It was off the chain. I've never been entertained or had this kind of hospitality or first-class treatment in my life. Not even when I went to the White House where we was treated like this. I mean, Fox and Rob did it first class. Man, and there was so many women wearing dresses and gowns. It was a ball. They had like 2 10 men with murals all on them. And these guys were dancing. And as we got ready to leave, Nikisha, they said, "You can't leave, because they're going to make a grand entrance." This is 11:30 at night. All of a sudden, the brass band from New Orleans came through the front door with the trombone. Womp, womp, womp. And Fox and Rob, they had the umbrellas and everything. The same thing you see on TV when you come from a funeral.
Yeah.
Baby, people jumped on the bar, on top of the table. I've never been to a New Orleans party. I mean, it had me dancing, and I don't even dance, you know.
I hope they recorded that, because I would love to have seen everything. Do you know they recorded everything?
Yes, it was fantastic.
It would, and the film that they just completed, this second documentary called Time 2. People, we suggest that you check it out. It make you laugh. It make you cry. You learn about prison life. It is inspiring and motivational. It was an evening that we would never, ever forget. For 2 days, we enjoyed ourselves in New Orleans with Fox and Rob Richardson. And on top of that, they had 4 of their 5 sons there. Six. They got 6 sons and 5 of them were there. I mean, and to see a family with their sons and a mother and a father hugging, kissing, holding each other, celebrating that their mother and father came out of prison after 3 and 21 years, and they are together. It was an evening. It was a memorial. Man, I couldn't sleep when I came out of it. I just felt so overjoyed with warmth, love, compassion, and friendship. I've never been received like that, Martine and I. It was off the chain, man.
And it's amazing that Time 2 will debut at the Essence Film Festival. Time 2 will debut at Essence Film Festival next week. In New Orleans, so that's exciting as well.
In closing with that, Kenneth, they say that the first film, Time, was nominated for Academy Award for this year in January. They didn't win, but they were nominated. The second film, the documentary called Time 2, if it doesn't win an Academy Award, we know some Joogie Boogie involved. This film would touch you in ways that you haven't, and I've seen in my 4 or 5 decades, I've seen over several hundred films and documentaries and short videos on prison, correction, criminal justice, but not one can touch Time 2. Please check it out. Don't Roach. Take my word for it. Just check it out.
Everybody had wet eyes. I mean, 2 is even more amazing, like you say, than 1.
1 was amazing in and of itself.
Itself. I mean, because Fox had a stand-up 6-foot image of Rob in their house while they were going through these 21 years of fighting for his freedom. So they would talk to him, see him every day. In fact, he spent more time with his sons inside prison than men who are out here with their telephone. Children.
On the telephone. So, hello. So, can y'all still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I just want to say, we wanted to share that Fox ball. It was a sneaker ball. Everybody had on gowns and bad sneakers. It was a black and white sneaker affair. It was called a Freedom Ball for All. And folk, I've never, ever, 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 ever participated or been a part of. Just seeing it warm your heart to see so much love and genuine compassion and people feeling for each other. And the people in New Orleans are working together to get one of the ladies that got out was Mama Glow. She did 50 years. Fox and Rob been working on getting people out of prison. They got out. She did 3. He did 21. And they haven't stopped. Excuse me, working yet. So I want to say thank you. And we're talking about the Fox and the Rob in the Romney House. Something else. We saw some things down in New Orleans that just blew my mind. I want to talk about going down memory lane in regards to what's going on in our city, Kenny.
Roach, can you do something real quick? Can you give the call-in number?
Yes.
20.
This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. The call-in number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893.
Right.
Roach, you want to call in with it? Go ahead, Kenny.
Come up memory lane. I was driving up 13th Street on Father's Day, just riding around the city looking at it with my daughter. And I asked her a trivia question. I said, how many black hotels were there in Washington, D.C. in the last 50, 60, 100 years? Well, she's pretty astute. She knew about 2 of them, but she didn't know about the White Law Hotel.
Yes.
A lot of people in this town don't realize the White Law was a hotel. Well respected place for upper middle class blacks to stay in. It's located on the corner of 13th and T, for those who don't know. And these historical facts that we just have never captured, because we tell people about the hotel on the corner that took up half of 15th Street. They said, that's not true. That's a senior citizen building.
Mm.
No, it is not. That Dunbar Hotel had everything, a restaurant, a barbershop, a beauty shop,
record shop.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. You know, and go ahead.
No, go ahead, Roach.
Well, you was talking about that, the record shop in the White Law Hotel. There's been a few more. When Cecilia had her little club on U Street, I mean, on Wilburger Street, right next to the Howe Theater, when I was working with Cecilia about 6 to 9 months before she passed away, we were working, looking at some of her properties. I had no idea, Kenny, that she owned so many properties. During the day, some of the number brackets and hustlers could not buy properties. She was a fair-skinned, light-skinned lady, was very intelligent and looked astute, and you could misjudge her ethnicity. So they would come to her, and she would use her whatever and buy these apartments and houses and apartments. She had a chain of about 30 or 40 buildings, man, that she owned, and some of these properties she owned for some of the guys who couldn't buy the property because of their background or history or whatever. So she was not only an entrepreneur, but she was making a bridge between folk. And something else that I want to just pop in my mind. This is the summer, man. And every summer we go to Carter Burn, we go to Rock Creek Park, We used to go to Carr's Beach. We used to go to Sparrow's Beach. Buzzard, I mean, all these places. We don't have no more of these places no more. When you get a car in the summertime, the first thing you do is you get a car and you ride in your neighborhood. So you show off all your buddies, you got a new ride. There's nowhere to ride to show your ride. There's no place for us to go. Well, we got a call on. Our first caller, you're on the air, please. Question or comment? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Come on with it.
Oh, yeah. This is Brother Carlos. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. I really, really love your city. Some of the good things is that the people of Baltimore and the people of Washington both facing the same dilemma in many cases, and that's they all catching hell.
Yes.
When I came through many, many years ago, Washington, D.C., and got married by Fauntleroy up there in his church.
New Bethel Baptist, Knife and S.
Yeah. I stopped at some of those motels along New York Avenue and Route 50.
Yeah.
Coming in and could not get accommodations. They did not serve black people at that particular time. So I found Washington, D.C. was, at that point, very, very racist. Very, very racist as far as the white vendors were concerned. Now, when I came into Washington, D.C., I did get accommodations at, I think it was the Roosevelt Hotel.
Yes, and, on 16th Street.
Enjoyed myself in there. And one other thing, small thing, again, those half smokes that Ben Chili Bull served, the one that we paid $10 for and 10% tax, I was surprised to learn that they come out of Baltimore, out of a place up there on Franklintown Road that manufactures them, and we can buy them all in this area and what have you. But and by the way, I want to give my deep condolences to the family of Butch McAdams. He was on the air over here in Baltimore as well. He truly loved Washington D.C., but I don't think he knew a whole lot about Baltimore. Thank you for taking my call.
You know what you just said about the hotel. Cecilia Scott Penny, she had Cecilia's right next to the Howe Theater, and a lot of entertainers would stay upstairs over top of her bar and at the Dunbar Hotel. That was one of the things that I liked about segregation, that we were segregated, but all the stars and entertainers from Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, James Brown, they all stayed at the Dunbar Hotel, the Whitelaw, or Cecilia's, or somebody's house in Jack and Mom's, maybe. They couldn't go to all the big hotels. So one of the advantages that I liked or enjoyed about living in a segregated city is that it kept us closer together. All the entertainers, they didn't go out into Maryland or the suburbs. They couldn't go. They had to stay right there in the city. So when they finished performing, they would come to the bar or the nightclub, and you could rub shoulders and talk to them, meet them on a personal basis. All that's gone. That's no longer here. These are one of the things we're talking about. You need to say again about Coach Bush, my dad, and I don't want to leave him. We miss you, Coach. We miss you, Sonja Butler Truesdale. We miss you, Foots. Because here go folks who participated, and they didn't ask for no money. They just gave and gave of their knowledge, their experience, their insight, and they contribute to the development of this city in ways that we're going to find out years later. Bush did this, or Sonja did this, or Foots did this. Mm-hmm. But we got to remember and pay homage to those folks who paid their price to make sure that we're still here and we're living a better life.
And Roach, I think we're too close to the situation to appreciate it. Whoever called you an elder was right on point.
I ain't no elder. I don't know what an elder do, man. I don't know why they did that to me.
An elder shares wisdom and perpetuates history. And you and your wife and Akeisha have been doing it for quite some time. I just want to say something to that gentleman from Baltimore, Carlos. That's an inside joke. Butch has had a battle with Baltimore for about 15 years, constantly going back and forth, fussing with the people in Baltimore, and they want to fuss with us about D.C. What people don't know, Butch started his career with WOL, and Miss Hughes was down on 8th Street Northeast then. then moved up on Nebraska Avenue, then went over to Baltimore, and Butch continued to do a morning show in Baltimore. And I was on air with Butch Hove probably 15 years ago on Friday nights. And we always enjoyed going back and forth with the people from Baltimore. Recently, when Butch was doing a little set up at Tacoma Station, a whole busload of people would come over from Baltimore and share their history. And it was a very, very, very good relationship that the coach had with the people in Baltimore. Depending on when you knew him, you may call him Butchie. You could call him Butch. If you talk to his grade school classmates, they call him James. James McAdams. Like you and me, Roach, born right in the heart of Northwest, 14th and T. I was 13th in U. We just settled an argument last week with a gentleman that you know well, Ronald Jones. Lloyd Mays had to straighten him out, arguing with Butch about where was the original wings and things. Okay?
Yeah.
And who invented mambo sauce?
It's not the people that Larry are Adams. Larry Adams.
Larry Adams on 14th Street.
Wings and things. Yes.
Larry Adams. I would go in there, and I was his test dummy. He said, come in, Junior. Test this one. What do you think? And I would test out the mambo sauce he was creating, and he would give me a chicken wing for doing that. So I stopped by every week to talk to Mr. Adams, and he did not. Nikichi, you're an attorney. He didn't have.
We lost him.
Can't hear the voice.
Yeah, he lost his voice again.
Go back, because we missed a couple of sentences.
Unmuted, Kenny. Unmute. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, go back.
Mm-hmm. What I said, Nikichi, Mr. Adams did not have sophistication to get an attorney and patent mambo sauce. Mm-hmm. But you take a Roach Brown, a Kenny Brown, a Butch McAdams, a Lloyd Mays, we will tell you, we were there when he was perfecting that recipe. And now there are other people selling it, claiming that they were the inventors of it. They have a franchise in giant food store and other places. And Carlos from Baltimore, don't forget now, Ben Chili Bowl has their hash smokes and their chili in the giant food franchise as well.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, something else I wanted to hit, this is the summum. And this is when folks get together for barbecues, cookouts, and picnics. And we used to go to Rock Creek Park and Carter Burn and Fort DuPont and all these kind of places. We don't have it no more. Where do we go to celebrate our summers, cookouts and picnics? I used to ride through this city, and I could stop in any section of the city and drive to somebody's door and knock on the door and go in their house. Now I can ride all over the city. I don't know where nobody lives. I can't go to nobody's house. That freedom that we had of going to the neighborhood and you knew people on that street. I could go on streets. I spent 20, 30 years on it. I don't even know the puppy. Don't know nobody on none of the streets. This summer's here. Where do we go to celebrate our summer? How do we go in fellowship with our family? We had parks and places. In fact, I just found out they started another dog park. There's 20 dog parks in Washington, D.C. for people to take and exercise their dogs. But we don't have no parks for black people. No parks for young people. Where do we go if we want to fellowship and hang out and just shoot and chew the bobo? There's nowhere to go. We got another caller on. We'll take our next caller. Question or comment, please.
I got a question, Rose. Hello?
Come on with it. Hello, you got it?
No, I have a question. A question is, I know y'all been around for a while. I grew up in Southeast, and it's changing from what it used to be. You got more upper-class people, white people walking up and down the street and all that. It's 40, like they're scared to come there. But let me ask you this. All of you, do you think segregation was a good thing for black people? Integration was the best thing for us. To me, it seems to me we did better in segregated communities. We had better teachers. We cared about each other. We cared about the culture. We cared more about our children. We had some connectedness. But now, black people don't care about culture. They don't care a damn about each other. It's a terrible situation, especially for the younger people. And I would like for your comment that, to me, I think segregation was the best thing. So many ways we were together, but now we scattered all everybody, class-wise, a whole lot of things separate us. We have no family, don't even speak to family no more. and did nothing to them, but they just don't speak to each other no more. This type of thing.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
So can I respond to that?
Go ahead.
You see, one of the problems is that Brown versus Board of Education that was decided in 1954, people got it all screwed up. It wasn't about sitting next to white people on a at the bus stop or at the water fountain or at the school. It was about having the resources to be able to do our own. And if the only way folk thought you could get those resources is if you were right up there with white folk, that's kind of why they went along with it. But what it was about was the resources. There were no resources in the schools. Segregation is the difference between separation that it's on an equal basis with equal resources and the like. Right. And segregation, i.e. in the U.S. context, was really U.S.-style apartheid, of which South Africa modeled its apartheid situation off of Jim Crow segregation, you know, when you have a separation, but it's not equal. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they pulled the, I'm going to use your words, well, they pulled the jookie boogie over us, and we lost out just completely. We lost out the cultural ties that we had. We lost out the, all of that. And then still, it still was not equal because the resources were not there.
You know, one of the things about this segregation is, and we checked it out a few weeks ago, there are more black segregated schools now than it was before Brown versus Board of Education. We have more segregated schools now that after the Supreme Court ruled that it was illegal and unconstitutional to have segregated schools, there are more segregated schools now than there was during during segregation. And that's unbelievable.
I'd like to respond to this question. But before I do, Lloyd Mays just texted me and said he's been trying to get in. Can you repeat the call-in number? He said he keeps getting disconnected. But sir, I share your concerns. Get the number. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
202-588-0893 and call in Lord Mays. We're waiting for you.
I was going to state what Roach just said, but I share the passion that Nkechi has about this whole issue. But I want to share a personal experience of mine down memory lane. It was going to a family reunion at Langdon Park about 3 years ago. Roach, it was your family reunion. It had to be 200 or 300 people there.
Yeah.
Right. Always.
At least 200 to 300 people. I saw people I hadn't seen in years still hugging and loving each other. You can't take something from me unless I give it to you. Now, with all those people united and they come together once a year and they do a hell of a job, Roach, I don't have to tell you and Martine that. We are talking to each other, but we have to do a better job of it, sir.
Definitely.
We have to do a better job of helping each other. And I see that as a major issue where the family unit is not what it was before. And part of it is what you were saying. And Roach said, we were forced to be together. Okay? We had to go to the black hotels because we couldn't go to the white hotels. So what we do, we made the white hotels stronger and the black hotels go out of business. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. So we got to start from within. And looking at who we are, we get together at funerals and tell each other, man, I'm going to keep in touch with you. Okay? Yeah. But do we get together with that family and say, man, do you need anything? You know, Roach has a close friend, and I have him too, who's been helping people for years when they've lost a loved one because they're a little short on money. I won't call his name out because y'all will be calling him up begging. But we got to start. This is a we thing. Yeah. You know, the dollar bill that we create goes out of our community.
Mm-hmm.
But with the other folks who just got here, it circulates. And we have to start thinking like that. The issue with the schools is embarrassing, Roach. It's embarrassing.
It is.
Yeah, we definitely need to be about each other. We need to love on each other. And be about each other, because that's the only way we're going to win, with loving each other.
The caller mentioned about some good point. How do we feel about segregation? This is another one of these positive things. I won't say positive. It's one of the things that came out that we were able to take advantage of in segregation, that we were forced to be together. The school teachers lived in that neighborhood. The doctors lived in that neighborhood. They didn't live in Silver Spring or in Potomac, Maryland. They lived right in the community. So you interacted with it. And all my school teachers, knowing I grew up, were on U Street. They was in the pool room. They cleaned. I can sit when school let out after 3 o'clock. I would see my teachers 6-7 o'clock in the evening at a bar or a restaurant in the community.
That's correct.
So we had a closer combine. Now everything is separated, man. You don't. You, it's hard to find somebody's neighborhood, somebody's house. And I go back to that thing about this is the summer, and this is in our age now. We need to enjoy what time we have. We don't have these events, so people, please, if folks who are doing the Rock Creek Park or Leetroit Park thing, we need to have these cookouts and picnics on a regular basis, because, baby, today might be the, every time you see somebody, it could be the last time. We got two more callers. Let's take out two callers. To take the next caller, please, because our time is running out. Next caller, please.
Okay, good morning. I just want to say that you brought back so many memories today. I'm born and reared in... from Washington, D.C., went to public school, grew up with everything that you're saying, grew up when we went on the SS Mount Vernon down to Marshall Hall, and we couldn't
Marshall
get on
Hall.
The boat.
Yes.
We had to watch the white people get off the boat, go to the amusement park. We had to stay on, ride to Mount Vernon, turn around, come back, pick them up, and then drop us off at Southwest.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to say something about that too, if I may, real quick.
Go ahead.
I remember young, real young, wanting to go to Glen Echo Amusement Park because we were
yes.
getting those jingles. And mommy
yes.
said we couldn't go, and I never understood why we couldn't go. Of course, I know now. But there's a film, a documentary that just came out dealing with Glen Echo, the segregation, why blacks couldn't go there, and the protest movement that. Opened that up. So I'm just saying, I know that was in Maryland, wasn't in D.C., but it was something that D.C. folk
yes, were
yes,
all
the time. So, yes, yeah, I just wanted yes, to raise that.
Yes, we got another caller on. We'll take our next caller because the time is running out. You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Yes, it's a comment, bro. Good afternoon. Thank you for all you do and continue to do amazing. The Holy Ghost and the Spirit be with you, all of you. And he teach you, all of you. Yeah, I grew up around, this is the satellite lady, by the way. Yes,
I know who you were, you satellite
yes.
lady.
I grew up around Peter Green, went to Francis Junior High School, Cardoza, and all that. And right there on Logan Circle, where Mary McLeod Bethune's house was, Dr. Haight would let us come in there in the 60s. There's little girls that hang out with them. And Carter G. Wilson's office is still there on 14th and Rhode Island Avenue. Now there's a Chase Bank in there. You know, as a young kid, seeing the remember when Martin Luther King came to my elementary school and Bundy, that's right, right there on Griffin O and everything. Remember when he came there? And
yes.
also I remember when what's his name? Nat King Cole and James Brown.
Yes.
Nat King Cole had a white Rolls Royce in the '60s when I was a little girl. Driving through our neighborhood, can you believe that? And James Brown, a black Cadillac driving through our neighborhood. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like yeah. we had built this city, built this country, and now certain people is giving it to the foreigners, and I'm sick of looking at it. These
okay.
have nothing here.
Thank you. Okay, we got to go ahead.
Roach, real quick. The hand dance community is still strong in D.C.
Yeah.
Yes. From the old times, from the old school, you're talking about cookouts, people are getting together and dancing, and that is something D.C. that has continued. I just wanted to
Wednesday
night,
the Freedom Plaza, every Wednesday.
You got it.
Awesome.
You know, we had a couple of things. You got the, like you say, the hand dance. We got the hip hop. We got the go-go. We got the Chuck Brown. We got so much stuff came out of Washington, D.C. that made an impact worldwide. But I'm pushing again. We need to get back together, folks, because time is running out, and we don't have much time, a lot of us. So... when you see somebody speak, say hello, how you doing? Because you don't know the next time you see them. One of the things we do, we say Merry Christmas all day, every day. I get cursed out sometime. I get threatened for saying that because it's the middle of the summer. Whether they understand it or not, it doesn't matter. Thank you for being you, and I'm glad to see you and glad that you're listening to our show. And we're trying to spread some love and some togetherness. So, folks, please speak to each other, help each other. We need to come together because this is our city, our home, and we ain't got much time left. Our time is running out. We want to say thanks to Kenny Brown, third generation Washingtonian, to our distinguished co-host Nikisha Taifa, to my beautiful wife Mertine, and to Mike and the folk at the station. Thank you. And listen to the song that we're playing. because we're in honor of Reverend Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale, Stephen Foots Bowden, and Bush McAdams. We miss you and we need you. Thank you. And this is Crossroads. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong.
And oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on far too long.
Yes, this is movement time, and when it's movement time, we can all be together.
Reverend Dr. William Barber.
We are here to announce that on June the 29th at 10 o'clock on Pennsylvania and 3rd, we are calling for the Mass Poor People's Low-Wage Workers' Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls, June 29, 2024. We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol up and trying to tear democracy down. We need a picture of folk trying to build a democracy up and lift up all people, regardless of who they are, June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment, about how vacancies are filled on local station boards, and about the process will be posted on the pacifica.org website.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring the Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
I testify.
Sophie's Parlor is the original woman's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City On Saturday, July 13th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. crime bill targets the black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Rise Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast